gossip about and accusations and assumptions about the indigenous people of our country. And so as the Moro Filipino said, it is easier to dam a river than stop gossip. So I've got a joke. Julie, the church gossip and supervisor of the church's morals, publicly accused her neighbor, Ralph, of being an alcoholic because she saw his pickup truck parked outside the town's only bar. Ralph stared at her for a moment and said nothing. Later that evening, he parked his pickup truck in front of her house and left it there all night. I think that's so good. Social media can help bring the world together, or it can be a cruel form of gossip and tear us apart. It can spread a lot of rumors and falsehoods, fake news, and encourages people to have an opinion about almost anything, even when they know nothing about the topic. And so it spreads assumption and innuendo, which only ends up adding fuel to the fire rather than putting it out. Just yesterday, the PQB News Online reported that a 32-year-old man had tragically died at the scene of a hit and run on the corner of Hearst and McMillan around 2:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. And police were hoping for some information that might lead to some answers around this terrible tragedy in our town. But one of the first comments on social media in response was an assumption about the man's alcohol consumption as he was crossing the street and blaming the victim for his death. How could she know that? It was a perfect example of how rumors and gossip begin when someone who knows nothing about the accident hears news of it and passes an opinion on, adding harm to the situation. Gossip, assumption, opinion, rumors, slander, these are negative traits that do so much harm in any given community, and they can hurt us. Now, we have all, at one time or another, offered our opinion or talked about someone in a negative way. Hands up if you have never, ever in your entire life ever done that. Gossip is an ancient human practice. If humans didn't do it, there would be no need for the Bible to be full of passages around the harm of gossip. Like in Proverbs, where it says, without a gossip, a quarrel dies down. That's a good one. Or Proverbs, the words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to the inmost parts. Or this one, a perverse person stirs up conflict, and a gossip separates close friends. Gossip can cause so much harm in any community. In the movie Doubt, starring Meryl Streep, who plays a mother superior, and Philip Seymour, who plays a parish priest, Philip Seymour, who is accused of some very difficult things based solely on gossip, preaches a sermon one Sunday morning on gossip, which demonstrates a very powerful image of the impossibility of taking back negative words after we have spoken them. He tells the story of a woman who confessed to her priest that she had passed some rumors, some gossip around her church community, and then she found out that they were false and all the harm they had done. And she comes to confession expecting to say some Hail Marys as an act of contrition. Instead, the old parish priest has her climb up to the roof of her tenement house with a feather pillow and asks her to rip the pillow open with a knife to see what the wind does with all the feathers. So the woman does what the old parish priest asked her to do, and she watches in horror as the feathers go everywhere. And she has no power to control where the feathers go after they've been released. And the priest says to her, "Go and collect all the feathers the wind has scattered." And she protests, saying that there is no way that she can find and gather up all those feathers. There are too many, and she can't control the journey of each individual feather or where they will end up. And the old parish priest says to her, "Precisely. This is the problem with gossip and rumor." One of the sermons I most remember, because I know you remember every single word I've ever spoken, right? I can remember a handful of sermons in my life, but I remember this one, and it was preached by my father-in-law, Howard Pentland, who I think borrowed it from a preacher from the 19th century when I went to do research on it, who may have borrowed it from the Buddha. It's difficult to trace, but no matter where it comes from, I think it's good wisdom that I would like to pass on to you. And I'm sure you may have heard it before, but it's always a good reminder, I think, especially when a faith community is struggling with some challenges, and we don't want rumors and gossip and assumptions to add further harm to those involved. These three questions about testing ourselves can be a helpful filter to our speech. Reminds us, before we speak about another human being, we need to first ask ourselves, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? First, is it true? As one quote on gossip I found said, I love this, "Lies travel halfway around the world before truth has even had time to put on its shoes." Before we pass on something we have heard or think about someone, we must first ask ourselves, is what I am saying true? Is it even a fact? Is it hearsay? Or did I hear it directly from the person? Do I have verification for what I am saying? And if the answer is no, we certainly have no business repeating it. Is it kind? Before we say anything about anyone, we need to ask ourselves, am I passing on something loving and positive? Or something hateful and negative and hurtful? Are my words kind? Or are they cruel? If the person I am speaking of could hear these words spoken to them, would they be hurt or affirmed? Would these words build the person up or would they tear them down? And if the answer is no, they're not kind, it's probably best not to speak them. And finally, is it necessary? Are these words going to help or harm the situation? Usually when you've passed the not true and not kind, it's probably not necessary. But on the rarest occasions, only on the rarest occasions are negative words about someone else necessary to share. Sometimes if there is information about someone and this person has done harm, that is an important knowledge if it has passed the filter test of truth, to be shared, only in the case of protection. And I'm going to give you an example. I can think of a situation in a church I served, not here, in which the newcomer that had come came to me and my colleague and told me that they were a convicted pedophile who had served time in prison. And he told us that he had groomed young preteen girls and their family in his Mormon church where he was an elder. He had been caught and served time. And now he came to us as the ministers and wanted to worship in our little congregation because he noticed we didn't have very many children. We prayed about it. We talked about it. We wrestled with it. We thought, how do we hold this man with forgiveness and grace, but also protect the children we did have and certainly the families we did want to come to our church? So we said this: if he allowed us to share that information with parents in our congregation and he met with us regularly, we would consider his membership. Well, he told us he didn't want anyone else but the ministers to know. So we then had a meeting with his probation officer, and it was decided that we needed to protect our sheep, and he would not attend our church, but would attend an evening service at another church that had no children in attendance, and the probation officer would watch the situation carefully. In that situation, it would have been necessary to share difficult information about a person in order to protect the lambs in the community. That's the only circumstances that I can think of when it would be necessary. Something like that. When a community is going through challenging times, it is a great temptation to share any little bit of information we may have. But it usually doesn't add healing to our situation. And so I think this filter of three questions that I was taught long ago by my wonderful father-in-law, I think is helpful for us when we are wondering whether or not we should speak words about another person to another person. And then I think Paul adds to help in our situation, to any community, to any church. In our scripture this morning, Paul is writing to the church in Philippi because it appears from the letter that Euodia and Syntyche, two women leaders in the church, are in some tension with one another. And someone has apparently sent word to Paul, whether it was one of the women or both of the women or someone else, who has told Paul, we do not know. But rather than assume or add fuel to the fire, or criticize, or speak unkindly of these women, or gossip about them, he speaks first of all about his love for both of these women, and for his love for all of the people of the Church of Philippi. He speaks words of love, and he reminds them that they are all a family when he calls them brothers and sisters whom I love. And then he affirms them by saying they are his joy and his crown, and he longs for their presence, and that they have all been through a lot together. And he reminds the community of how important they are to each other, and the importance of the work of God they have been accomplishing in their community. And then he urges and pleads with the women and those in conflict to resolve their differences, to be of one mind. He doesn't pick sides in the disagreement or get into the details of their conflict. He just strongly encourages each of them to find agreement, to find common ground. And then he doesn't expect them to do that on their own. He asks his loyal companion, whomever that is, to help these women resolve their differences, to be of one mind. Because Paul realizes that sometimes we can't resolve differences on our own. We need an objective third party to help us see each other more clearly. But he doesn't even stop there. He then asks the community to be gentle with each other, and to pray for one another, and to pray for the community, and to ask for God's guidance in this struggle. And then finally, he asked the church of Philippi not to focus on the negativity that is going on in their community, but on the positive. He tells the church at Philippi to focus on the good that is happening in their community of faith and not on the conflict, and to dwell on whatever is true. He says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, and if there is any excellence and worthy, anything worthy of praise, think about those things. And he says, when you do all that, the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will be with you. I think Paul gives us amazing, wonderful guidance this morning to love one another as family, to affirm one another, to help resolve disagreements and find common ground amongst our body, to be gentle with one another, to pray for guidance for this difficulty, and above all, to focus on the good that we are accomplishing together, recognizing that we are doing far more good together than we could ever do alone. These are wise and helpful words for us at Knox at this time and at any time, and for any time in each of our lives. This is a congregation full of wonderful and dedicated leaders and hard workers, and so worthy of God's love. I get Paul. As a minister, I am privileged to be invited into your homes and to get to know your courageous stories. And I have nothing but awe and admiration for each one of you that I have come to know, for all that you have been through in your lives and continue to be. As I have come to know each person in this congregation, I have come to love and respect you. In working with many of you in leadership on council over these past 3 years, I have come to know your strengths and your weaknesses as you have come to know mine. And Paul invites all of us to focus on the strengths we have together, the good in one another. Paul's wise and faithful letter invites us to focus on the good. Whatever is good, whatever is commendable, whatever is pleasing. Because when we focus on the positives and can forgive the negatives, the peace of God becomes so palpable. There are so many wonderful things that Knox has accomplished in this community together for the last 100 and some odd years. And we need to celebrate every single one of them. And to be, as Paul said, of one mind, to be affirming of one another and resolve any differences that have been going on for years. This coming week, our leadership will be helped by conflict mediator Kevin Fletcher, and he'll be working with the ministry team and with the council and leaders to help us find agreements in our working with one another. And I am confident that we will be able to move forward in a very positive way, and I see signs of hope already. On my first week back last week, one of the leaders of our community came to me and apologized for the ways that their behavior had not always helped this community. With sincere tears in their eyes, they asked for forgiveness for ways in which they had caused harm and promised to do better. They emphasized that they knew that this was God's church, not theirs or any of ours, and they wanted to serve God and the church better going forward. And they asked for my forgiveness. And touched by their faith and vulnerability, I gave the forgiveness they asked for and hugged them and called them my brother, my sister, because they are. When they asked what they could do to help going forward, I said, model reconciliation among the leadership like you just did. There is so much goodness in the good people of Knox. And it is my hope that each of us can see the good, the pure, the commendable, the honorable in one another. Think on these things, and the peace of God will be with us. May we find this time a time of rich and profound blessing. May it be so. Amen.